This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A recent news story out of West Michigan caught our eye. Three of the five men linked to the biggest meth bust in Michigan have been sentenced to federal prison. It all began with a traffic stop in Pawpaw, and that led police to discover more than 20 pounds of pure methamphetamine from the vehicle and from a pole barn in Van Buren County. U.S. Homeland Security believes methamphetamine is being smuggled into the country in hidden compartments of vehicles and then sold in West Michigan. And crime reports find southwest Michigan counties top the state list for meth lab busts, while burns from explosions and spills from cooking meth are on the rise in Kalamazoo County, and meth cases crowd court dockets in southwest Michigan. We wanted to shed more light on methamphetamine, and our next guest can bring us this story in an intensely personal way. Jen Servey founded the Collegiate Recovery Program while she was a student at the University of Michigan. Today, she's a substance abuse coordinator at the Michigan Ability Partners in Ann Arbor and is soon heading to Texas to continue work with the Collegiate Recovery Program. Most importantly, Jen Servey is a recovering meth addict. She has been sober since May 13th, 2006, and she joins us here in the studio. Welcome to the program, and I see your face kind of smile when I say that day. That was your new life, May 13th, 2006?
That was. That was my ultimate surrender to the disease and the day of my new awakening.
And here you are working to help people from going down the path that you followed. Tell us when meth first entered your life.
Well, it was late 1998, so that would make me, about 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I had tried other drugs in the past. I have a history of opiate usage. I've had tried alcohol early in my undergraduate years. I had some marijuana usage and had been able to put down all other drugs when they stopped kind of working for me or had some consequences from their usage. However, when the first time I tried methamphetamines, there was something completely different about it. The first time I ever tried methamphetamines, my brain literally lit up, and I knew that I never wanted to be sober again.
It was a different feeling than anything you'd felt.
It was.
Who gave it to you? How did it enter your life?
You know, interestingly, I had a friend that was working at a county jail down there in Texas, you know, which kind of shows you the normalcy of the usage down there. She brought it over one night. I said no the first time she offered it. The second time she offered it, I did it. And I absolutely never wanted to sleep again.
Why?
I was one of those kids growing up that, like, I absolutely loved my life. Like, it wasn't that I used drugs to escape life. I used drugs to enhance my life. I had a hard time early on balancing, like, alcohol usage and my academic studies and the demands of my friends. So the first time I did meth, I thought, you know what? I can balance everything and never have to sleep again.
Is your thinking still clear, or what does it do to just the way you operate throughout the day while you're high on meth?
Well, the thing about it is as an individual, you think that your thinking is clear. But when the body stays up 8 and 9 days at a time, it can't possibly be functioning normally. The body needs to sleep at the end of the day. The body needs to eat, and it takes everything in your power to even sit down and have a meal. So when I was going 8 days at a time without sleep, maybe eating one meal a day, and usually those meals were based upon high sugar content, dehydration from not intaking many fluids, you know, surviving in Texas heat of like 100 degrees, my body wasn't functioning normally.
And were you going to school at the time? What were you supposed to be doing in your life at that time?
I was. I was completing, supposedly, the end of my bachelor's degree in sociology at Texas Women's University.
Wow. And how did that go?
Well, I, at the time, basically stopped going to classes because I thought that I was done. Simultaneously, my mother was getting, she had rheumatoid arthritis and was getting increasingly ill. And my family began to start calling me on a regular basis saying I needed to come home. And I stopped answering the phone.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what was the progression, Jen, as you were using? How long did you use?
I used until 2006.
So what led to that crash where you said, I have to stop? Because you did go to jail and prison, didn't you?
For sure. So I had many interventions. My first one came in 1999. Quickly, I got my first possession case. So immediately I had the court system. I was drug screening for the court system 3 times a week. During that time period, I was still using and trying to fake out the court system, knowing that I would probably go to jail. I did a small time in jail on that one. I went to my first treatment center, did a 30-day treatment center during that time period, and it did not get any better. My mother passed away in December of 1999. I spoke at her funeral. Hi. I was on her bedside here in Michigan at Beaumont Hospital. Hi. And those consequences were not enough to make anything change. In fact, at that point, that was a tipping point that led me all the way into addiction, where I had the thought process of, if your mother died, you would use too. And during that time period, I caught 5 felony charges, all for possession of methamphetamines under a gram within the state of Texas in 4 different counties.
So you were leaving quite a wake of legal trouble in your in your trail. And who were your friends? Who were the people in your life?
So my ultimate goal was to become the functional drug addict. So I led a double life. I had the people that supported my drug habits. I had my father that was an enabler who supplied all the funding for this. I had also this other life of people who were like my bosses, my employers, because I was trying to go to work every day. And who knew nothing about my drug habits, except that the accidental, random, oh my gosh, I ended up in jail again.
Boy, I'm talking with Jen Servey, who today is with Michigan Ability Partners. She also founded the Collegiate Recovery Program while she was a student at the University of Michigan, sharing her experience of being a methamphetamine addict for many, many years. And it was not until May 13th, 2006 that she stopped using. So having begun in 98 and going to 2006, you had such a long stretch. And I suspect now that you've gone through the tunnel and you look back, you realize you're very lucky to be sitting here talking with us today.
I am.
Your father, you just said, was an enabler.
He was.
What did your father do? Your mother passed away in 99. So as you went through these years of meth addiction, what did your dad do that was wrong?
He understood nothing about addiction. And, you know, today he still struggles, I think, with a little bit about what recovery means. He could not stand to see his daughter incarcerated. You know, and I think he felt very helpless, and I think he felt very alone. And so, you know, he did a lot of things to orchestrate and manipulate, like move everything that I owned up to Michigan, you know, in order to thinking that that would control me and move me back up to Michigan. And all it did was it sent me to treatment here at Brighton Hospital. And I moved right back down and did everything under my terms.
Right back to Texas.
Yes, I moved exactly where to my source of my drugs were. I took my car, I took my dog, and I took $200, and I moved right back to Texas. And within 8 months, I was incarcerated for the last time. The thing that he finally did right was he listened to my attorneys that were also my bondsmen, and the very last time, they said, you leave her there.
And he did.
I no longer had a bond. May 13th of 2006, I was arrested in a very small county of Palo Pinto County, Texas. And I had 4 charges out of 4 counties and had just received my 5th. And I called and he said, no, I will not leave you there.
And that was the first time you heard that?
Yes. And the door slammed for the very last time.
So what did it take then? There's that date, May 13th, 2006. You had to own your illness. How did that happen?
I was on a payphone with my father in a really small county jail. And I said to him, fine, I'm an addict. And for the first time in my life, I heard my voice reverberate off the jail cell walls. And I believed it. And I stood up, and for anybody that's ever been in a county jail, they have this module that's like the toilet and the sink, and it's all together. And I stood up on the little toilet, and I looked in this little funhouse mirror, and my eyes no longer had a soul. And see, all this time I had always thought that I couldn't possibly be an addict because I thought I was a college graduate, which I later found out I wasn't because I stopped going to classes. Doesn't mean you get a degree. But I thought that I was a college graduate from a really good family and that these kind of things don't happen to somebody like me, that they only happen on TV. And the thing about it was they do. And for the first time in my life, when I saw the reflection of myself and I heard my voice say those words, I surrendered. And that's the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous.
And that was that all it took? Did you ever backslide? Did you ever use again? Or was that the end for you?
That was my moment of clarity.
And now you finally did graduate.
I did. I finally have completed my degree at a local university. But it wasn't until I applied here at U of M to the Master's of Social Work program that I even figured out I didn't even have a bachelor's degree. Mm. I finished a bachelor's degree. I completed an associate's degree. And then I came here to U of M to the social work program.
And in setting up the collegiate recovery program and working with Michigan Ability Partners, and now you're heading back to Texas to again, help people from going down your path. Explain why Southwest Michigan is the area with the most meth activity. We don't see as much meth activity as far as meth labs, and the court cases seem to be really concentrated in Southwest Michigan. What is it about producing meth that makes that happen?
Well, my feelings is, and this is just my opinion, mm-hmm. is that, for example, in Texas, the reason why meth became so popular in Texas is because it's really easy to produce methamphetamines in an area that's in a rural area. Meth smells really strongly when you produce it. It takes a lot of farming chemicals to make it. Mm. The government has really closed down on a lot of the amphetamines that you take to purchase to make it. You can't just make methamphetamines necessarily in the middle of your neighborhood. I mean, you can, but for example, when I was living in downtown Fort Worth, the kid across the street from me tried to make it in his house, and he blew up the next door neighbor's house. So when you try to do these things, more than likely, you're going to end up getting caught. It's really easy to make it in the middle of a farmhouse because the chances are the DEA is not going to come like looking for you, and the next door neighbors aren't going to know what they're even smelling.
So, in fact, we were talking about the television program Breaking Bad, which is going into its final season. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of Americans who've watched that show had their eyes open. And you said you found it incredibly authentic.
It was very authentic. I mean, it was authentic down to the production, the way it was produced, the glassware that was made. I mean, to my experience. And I was thrown right in the middle of it. I mean, some of the experiences that I had in my last year out using scared me, but not scared me enough to be sober. I mean, and that was the point when I knew that I was in, and I had lost sight of being a functional addict, and I knew that I could go to prison for a really long time, and I didn't know how to stop using because the insidiousness of meth usage. Meth tells you it was telling me every single morning if I didn't get high that day, I was going to die.
Which is something you never got from marijuana or from alcohol or pills.
No. And it tells you that you can be so functional and so productive and get so much accomplished on it. And I think that that's why it really appeals to the college-age student. Because it shows you that you can get so much classwork done. You can study for hours and you can be so academically successful. So it appeals to the students who have all these academic pressures on them and to be the best and to achieve so much on a college campus.
How do you, Jen, as a counselor, as someone who works or tries to keep kids from going down the path you went on, how do you from the outside get them to where you were internally when you looked in that mirror in that county jail in Texas and saw you didn't have any soul left in your eyes? How do you get them there?
I can, number one, share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, a lot of what we've done with collegiate recovery is be able to form a community because, let's face it, university campuses are a place where it is the social acceptance and the social norm to use alcohol, to use marijuana, to use things like Adderall to be academically successful. So how do we show these students who maybe have this disease that it is cool to be on a Saturday afternoon and to go to, like, for example, the Michigan-Notre Dame game and not be obliterated? How do we form a community where it's a safe place for them to be sober? Well, we, number one, give them a place where they can be together. We, number two, show them a place where they can celebrate their recovery and have a fun time together. It's the same concept as a fraternity, basically. But you know, where they have a place of like-minded individuals coming together. to celebrate their success. Because for these kids, it's not an option of going out and just having fun or maybe being hungover on Sunday morning. For these kids, it's life or death. But a lot of college campuses have a, you know, like work hard, play hard mentality. These kids don't have an option of that. Like they can die if they go back out there. They don't necessarily have one more use of heroin in them. Kids are dying all over the state right now.
For the kinds of statistics that I was talking about at the beginning of this interview, Jen, how concerned do you believe we should all be about the meth problem in Michigan?
I think it's growing. I think it's growing. And I think, you know, the thing about it is heroin doesn't necessarily scream it's prevalent in Ann Arbor, but it doesn't necessarily scream that you can be hugely academically successful. You know, it's definitely on our campus, but this meth thing, I mean, for me, when I first found it, I was like, I can do everything now. This is awesome, you know? And so I think we should be definitely concerned with it because it's one of those drugs, too, that gets you hooked right away the first time. So these kids try it once, and now they can do all the partying they want to do, increase their four-day weekends to 5-6-day weekends, and be academically successful at the same time here in Michigan. We got a problem.
You're heading to Texas
to
continue your work with the Collegiate Recovery Program. What do you want to continue doing throughout your life because of your experience as a meth addict?
I think that this has been my journey. Like, I think that I was given this disease in order to do this work. Like, I wouldn't be as good at this work or have this opportunity if I hadn't gone through everything that I went through. And I learned a lot, you know, from making mistakes and from, you know, learning how to work with students that are 30 days sober and fresh on a campus. So now I get the opportunity to do it again. And I'm taking it kind of back to my home state. So this is the 360 about it all, because now I'm really taking it back to where I'm from. The other blessing about all this is I have been cleared by the Texas prison system to bring Alcoholics Anonymous back into the Texas prison system. I would not be sober today if I had not started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous while I was incarcerated. So I'm really honored to be able to do that on the weekends down there too. And that wouldn't be possible if I didn't move back. So I think there's kind of a 360 about it all too. If I didn't go through everything I went through, I wouldn't get to keep going back down there. So I think I have kind of a gift for working with college students. So I'm kind of excited about it.
And so back at it. Jen Servi, a substance abuse coordinator with Michigan Ability Partners in Ann Arbor, but heading back to Texas, where she'll be working with the Collegiate Recovery Program. And also now that we're here, helping incarcerated women with Alcoholics Anonymous as well. She stopped using meth and her life changed on May 3rd, 2006. Jen, thank you for sharing your story with us on Stateside.
Thank you very much.